Judd Surratt on the call over at Nesson. The Boston Bruins fall in overtime to the Anaheim Ducks, a team that was hot going into the break and stays hot coming out of it. For the Bruins, it was basically the opposite of that. They were cold going into the break, and they stayed cold coming out of it, and that's where we start here in the second hour. It's Christian Arcand, Sunday Mass, Reverend Arcand here, 617-779-7937 is your phone number. I want to talk a little bit about that game, a little bit about Four Nations, and a little bit about the trade deadline. So we'll try and get all three of those topics covered here in these next 15 minutes or so. Because that game was really, I mean, a microcosm of the Bruins season, wasn't it? It was, they get beat early on, and they're down 2-0. They fight and claw and scrape their way back into the game. They score a second goal that gets waved off. People start throwing garbage on the ice, and then they look at it, and they're like, actually, yeah, that's a good goal. And it's like, yeah, right, we know. No one saw any goalie interference at any point, and you know how you could tell? Because the goalie didn't complain. That's all I needed to see. Right after the goal, I watched it, and I looked at it again. I'm like, did the goalie even complain? He didn't. There was clearly no goalie interference there. At any rate, they got it right. Game goes into overtime, and then you just heard the game winner right there, which was a big, meaty rebound left out there by Swayman. Who was it? Lori in the net. Someone was in the net trying to make a non-goalie save, and it just wasn't there. Carlson buries it, and that was that. And the Bruins continue on the way that they were. I know they don't have Charlie McAvoy. I know that they're short some players. Brad Marchand left the game with an injury. Pastrnak, by the way, Marchand and Pastrnak not at practice today. That's been reported about a half hour ago that neither one of those guys were present today at morning practice. So make of that what you will. I saw people suggesting that maybe it was an optional practice. For Marchand makes a little bit of sense. For Pastrnak, not so much. Pastrnak just had 2 weeks off. Brad Marchand at least had to play in the tournament. Pastrnak didn't. Which is, by the way, just real quick, part of why this thing is, it's a nice idea, and I do like the Four Nations concept, but if you're going to have it be an NHL production, then you have to have the best players in it, don't you? And without David Pastrnak and without Dreisaitl in there, because they're Czech and German, respectively, you know, I mean, Dreisaitl right now, he's your leader for the heart. That, to me, is somewhat, and it's not about that. It's all about USA-Canada. I mean, that's really what that tournament was all about. Finland and Sweden, it was nice of them to show up there. They were basically the Washington Generals of this tournament. It was all about Team USA. It was all about Canada. It was all about that rivalry. And listen, I don't have a problem with that. I love that rivalry. I think that rivalry is tremendous. But if it's just about those two teams, then okay, just make it about those two teams then. What do we have to make it Four Nations for? Just make it the Two Nations, you know? And if you want to really make it an NHL event, then you're going to have to let some of these NHL players, especially, I don't know, the best player in the league, able to play in it. Dreisaitl, I mean, not Pastrnak, but you know what I mean? Like, that seems like a basic common sense. But again, I mean, they're going to go back to the old all-star format. They're not going to have this thing every year, and you are going to have the Olympics next year. And I said this earlier on in the week, but I believe it. The Four Nations tournament, I think, will have a moderate effect on the rest of the NHL season. I don't think it's going to be a huge effect. I think if Team USA won, then maybe it would have been a little bit more pronounced. But even if they did, I still think it would have been limited. What I do think, though, is that the Four Nations tournament was the perfect appetizer, amuse-bouche, if you will, for next year's Winter Olympics and Team Canada, Team USA in the Olympics playing for medals. That, to me, that they're probably, international hockey was the biggest winner here. The Olympics in Olympic hockey were the biggest winners here. The NHL, it was good for them. I don't think it was bad. The biggest losers are obviously the Boston Bruins because they lost Charlie McAvoy, and then also the Florida Panthers because they've lost Matthew Tkachuk. We'll see for how long. Is there an update on Tkachuk, by the way, Jacob? Do we know anything more about his injury?
He's probably going to be out pretty long term, but there hasn't been any official updates yet.
And they haven't. So what you're saying is the team physician hasn't released a multi-paragraph letter detailing the injury and blaming it all on the Team USA's doctors? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, there was definitely some shady stuff going on behind the scenes of Team USA. Like, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, seems that way. And with the McAvoy situation, listen, McAvoy, just like Tkachuk, made a choice to go out there and play in that first Canada game. He got hurt in the Finland game when he fell into the post. And then he goes out there, they shoot him up with Lord knows what, and send him out there in that Canada game. And I get it. The whole point of this was that these guys were taking it seriously, and they didn't want to miss out, and they didn't want to miss time. And Charlie McAvoy definitely didn't want to miss out on the Canada game. But, you know, like, to what extent did that play a role in it? I think that played the entire role in it. Further exacerbating his injury, which was all detailed in this note from the physician, by the way. This isn't me saying this. I mean, the physician detailed every aspect of the injury. Do you know how rare that is in hockey? We still don't know what part of Matthew Tkachuk's body is even injured right now. I don't know. Does anyone know?
There actually was an update that dropped earlier this weekend. Somebody at TVA Sports is suggesting that there's some concern that his season might be over as a whole.
Tkachuk's.
Yeah. Okay. But they're still waiting for testing.
Okay. Testing on whatever the injury is, which we're not sure. But again, I mean, so Florida has a right to be upset about this too. They do. But I think the difference here is that with the Florida Panthers and Team USA, the Tkachuks were a big part of this whole thing. And Tkachuk could have very easily not played in that last Canada game. And he shouldn't have played in that Canada game. That was stupid for him to play in that game. I said this on Friday, like, if you're going to rip on LeBron James for sitting out in the All-Star game in the NBA, but then give Matthew Tkachuk a total pass for playing 6 minutes in that Canada game, then I think you're being a bit of a hypocrite. I do. Oh, well, Tkachuk tried to play at least. Yeah, okay, great. He knew he couldn't play. And what, he wanted the photo op? Great. That really helped Team USA out a lot. Thanks. Thanks for all the help. You know what would have really helped? What would have really helped the Team USA maybe to beat Canada is if Tkachuk had stepped aside and let someone with, I don't know, a fully functioning body go out there and skate, okay? Because there was plenty of Tage Thompson, there was Quinn Hughes, although I think Quinn Hughes got restricted too, so maybe I should back up on him. But, you know, there's plenty of other guys that you could have brought out there who would have put on a sweater, come up to Boston, and played in that game for more than 6 minutes. I thought that whole thing was a little BS. But either way, with Tkachuk, at the very least, you can say it was a hockey injury. With McAvoy, there was a hockey injury. Then there was this other thing. This infection that came from, I don't know, from a shot that he got or something. I mean, listen, it had to have come from somewhere. You don't get an infection by falling into the boards with pads on and a sweater on and so forth. It doesn't work like that. So there has to be some kind of incision, okay? And we know that he was hurt and that they probably gave him something, shot him up, to send him out there in that game, and who knows, maybe it happened then. It wouldn't be unheard of. You know, Chargers fans will tell you that their quarterback got stabbed in the lung by a doctor. And I don't know if that happened here with Charlie McAvoy, but something happened. It was a very serious, fast-spreading infection, and they rushed him to the hospital. So, yeah, the Bruins are clearly upset about this.
More evidence to the narrative that something fishy was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. So, fishy, I mean,
they're
I don't
just
know.
Hockey players.
I don't think that they were trying to hurt anybody. Like, I don't think that the Team USA was trying to foil anybody's seat, you know? Like, when I'm not sure exactly when you say shady going on.
I just mean, like, doctors weren't properly evaluating players for injuries because they wanted to play so badly. They're just typical hockey players, and that's going to happen at every level, you know? But I feel like at a level as high as that, where millions of dollars are on the line, the doctor should be a little more cautious than what happened, you know?
Yeah, 100% they should be, and that's part of it. Like, this was an exhibition. I know the president called the team, but it was still an exhibition game, okay? I mean, this was the All-Star break. Let's not get way out ahead of ourselves here. It was something that got made up this year. They did it because the old NHL All-Star break was about as embarrassing as the NBA one has been and has turned into. And if you don't believe me, watch Nikita Kucherov last year in the skills competition, you tell me that these guys really took that whole thing seriously. And, oh, yeah, hockey's so great. I mean, you know, this was a great tournament. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that they had guys out there putting it on the line like it was Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs and trying to play through those kind of injuries when you still have a third of the season left to go and the actual playoffs on the team that's paying you money to be out there. I'm sorry. I mean, listen, I'm all for country pride. I'm all for that. But that's what the Olympics are for. Not tournaments that get made up to cover for the fact that no one cares about the All-Star. You know, like, that's a big, big difference. And both the Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins have every right to be ripped about this. And the Bruins are ripped about this. We'll see if Florida comes out and says anything. We'll see if that organization makes the same kind or any kind of statement about this. Because I wonder if, you know, the Bruins coming out with that whole thing. If you missed it, their team physician wrote a multi-paragraph response detailing the injuries. Not just the shoulder injury, but the infection, when he went to the hospital, when he checked in, how it was treated, who treated him, when they got relit, like the whole thing. And you never hear it. With Matthew Tkachuk, you still don't know what part of his body's injured. And meanwhile, the Bruins are telling you everything about this McAvoy injury. That's all I needed to hear. That's all I needed to hear to understand that, okay, the Bruins are pissed. The Bruins are legitimately pissed about this. And they should be. And Charlie McAvoy, listen, what do you think that he would have been the difference between this team making the playoffs or not? They're still only two points out of the wild card.
1 point.
It's only 1 point now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. 1 point away. That's meaning the day after tomorrow, or when's their next game? It's coming up here. They could be back in that wild card at 61 points. Yeah, you're right. And Ottawa and Detroit and all them are at 62. So there you go. It's not over. But I do think that the way they went into that break, those two games against New York and Vegas where they had third period leads and they blew them both, that losing McAvoy, coming back out of the break and having an overtime loss. I know you get a point for that. I forgot they got the point for that. But, you know, you have another sort of ugly loss here to a team in Anaheim who's been hot lately, but they're just sort of a middling 500 team just like you are. They're nothing special. And now you got to go forward who knows how long here without Charlie McAvoy. I really do wonder what this trade deadline is going to look like. I really wonder what kind of tough conversations are going to be had in that building. I know Char is now part of the front office. I wonder if him and Sweeney, what their limit's going to be in terms of transforming this roster, in terms of trying to shed payroll, in terms of trying to load up on draft picks and prospects. I mean, that's almost as big of a problem as the team that you're seeing on the ice right now. And that's a bad place to be in if you're the Bruins. Because their team on the ice is pretty lackluster. I mean, I know they're only a point out of the wild card, but it's the NHL. Everybody's supposed to make the wild card. The fact that you're on the outside of it looking in right now is troubling enough. But that being said, you may end up seeing yourself fall a little bit further out, and I think there will be fans who are going to be okay with that, because deep down, you know, and every Bruins fan knows, that this team's biggest issue is that they have no real crop of young players to come in and take over for the old guys, and that they had this big changing of the guard that never really happened because they didn't have the horses coming up through Providence. Instead, they had to go out and make trades and spend and do all these things. And, you know, now the bills come due, and I think we all understand that if this team wants to really get back into a more comfortable run, then they're going to need to have better drafts. And you have better drafts when you have more kicks at the can, I guess. I know that's sort of a weird thing to say about Don Sweeney, who had those three first-round picks and whiffed on all three of them. But, I mean, you know, like, that's kind of the point. At least you got DeBrusque out of there. You know, he's had a career at the very least, but he missed out on a lot of other guys. And that's sort of the point, is how far are they going to go with that? Yes, Jacob.
People have been saying this since before the Bruins made the Cup Final against the St. Louis Blues, when guys like Zdeno Chara and all of them were aging out of this league. But I think that they've just kind of, as you said, kicked the can down the road, and now they're finally feeling the effects of not having anything available for them to use.
Yeah, it's a shame. And I mean, listen, Mason Lauri, I know he's had some moments here, but he's a guy who probably should still be honing his skills down in the minors. He still makes a lot of mistakes. I feel like outside of him, there's not really a lot of other players that you feel great about, you know, that have come up through the system and that you think are going to be mainstream and top, you know, contributors on this team going forward. It's just they're not there, and they haven't been. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll take a quick break. When we return, the Boston Celtics taking on the New York Knicks. What a time this is to be a Knicks fan. They have not beaten a single good team all year, basically. And the Celtics looking to keep it that way today. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference. I also want to talk about something P.K. Subban said about the NBA and a response that Channing Crowder had to it about how people are kind of obsessed with nostalgia when it comes to the NBA, and that's what's hurting it. I do think they both have a point, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards the second thing, and I think the P.K. Subban is a little bit of a weasel, too, by the way. We'll get to all of that with your phone calls right after Jacob Lastner gets you caught up on what's trending. It's Christian Arkin here, WEEI. A little break from the Knights. I'll be back tomorrow, 6 o'clock, of course, all week long here. But we have a nice little doubleheader for you here in Boston sports today. Your Boston Red Sox taking on, who are they playing again? Minnesota? Jacob?
The Celtics?
No, the Red Sox.
Oh, the Red Sox are playing the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays. And the Celtics are playing the New York Knicks, of course. So there you go. I don't really care who the Red Sox are playing, but I do care is that Bregman is playing at third base, and also first looks at Garrett Crochet, who I've been dying to see go out there and throw to some live batters, so that'll be fun. And also the Boston Celtics taking on a New York Knicks team that they've absolutely owned as of late. No questions there. I mean, it's been a one-sided rivalry this year, and it kind of reminds me in a way of the way that the Panthers early on in the season smacked the Bruins around and how devastating I thought that was, considering the fact that the Bruins had made such a point in the offseason of getting bigger and tougher and making sure that those Florida Panthers never smacked them around like that ever again. And then, well, what do you know? They're bigger and tougher and slower, and Florida was skating circles around them in those first 2 weeks. Now, you take that over to the NBA, the Celtics, who have owned the Knicks for a long time now, saw their rival, and I say use that term loosely because it's not like they even played each other in the playoffs last year, but the Knicks, you know, they're a team that's close by, big media market, whatever, call them a rival if you want to. They go out there and they make moves. The Knicks go out and make big moves to try and compete with your Boston Celtics. And I thought they would. I really did. I thought the Knicks had a big offseason. I thought it was a good offseason too. They didn't sit around. They moved on from Julius Randle, which I know was not an easy thing for them to do. And all in all, I thought really had loaded up. Instead, and listen, I mean, they did get better. It's not like they're a bad team. But boy, are they still really, really very much trailing the Celtics. And you've seen it. You saw it opening night when the Celtics raised the banner. It's like the Knicks weren't even there. Last time they played at Madison Square Garden, another beatdown. And this is a Celtics team that sometimes loses their focus. They don't lose their focus against the Knicks. I mean, they really don't. That's when they get locked in. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the color of the uniforms or something. I couldn't tell you. But when the when they see New York over there on that other jersey, they rise to the occasion, boy. It doesn't matter where it is. It's not like it's even a Madison Square Garden thing. They did it at TD Garden, too. And they'll probably do it again at TD Garden here today. That being said, the Eastern Conference is a bit of a joke. It's a bit of a joke this year. The Celtics, not that I think they needed any help, but like this is really, there hasn't been, for all the talk about how there was going to be a big bullseye right on their back, yeah, I mean, listen, in the individual games, maybe sometimes there is, you get the best game from Toronto or whoever. But in terms of another team actually coming through and breaking through and challenging them for the dominance in the Eastern Conference, only one team's done that, and that's Cleveland. And they've done a great job of it, by the way. But other than that, no one has really, I don't even want it, like, they haven't even tested the Celtics. And that's a little disappointing, I got to say.
One of the better texters of the afternoon, aren't the Knicks the basketball version of the Jets and the Nets?
Yeah,
the Nets are a basketball team. What?
Yeah, how can they be the basketball version of a basketball team? That doesn't make a lot of sense there. I would say that I guess you could put them in the same category as the Jets. They won back in the 60s.
Maybe they were trying to say the Mets.
The Mets, yeah, that could be. Yeah, you could say the Mets. Sure. It's been a rough go for New York sports. I mean, it really has. Outside of the Giants, you really don't have a whole lot, you know? Like the Yankees, they're back in the mix. But it's been a while, you know? Like I think for New York, having all those teams, it's great until they all suck. then it's tough. But the Knicks don't suck. That's the thing, is that they're not like an awful team. And like the Jets were awful this year. The Giants were awful this year. But the Knicks aren't awful. They're the third best team in the East. If the Knicks were in the Western Conference, I think they'd still be relatively high. So you're not talking about a team that is totally fraudulent. But a team that when they have to go up against the best teams in the NBA, and by that I mean the Celtics, the Cavs, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, they have not beaten any of those teams one single time this year. They beat the Nuggets a couple times. For some reason, they got the Nuggets number. But when it comes to Boston, when it comes to Cleveland, when it comes to OKC, they are winless so far. And that, I think, puts them a significant tier below those teams. Now, really, it's a two-team race. I don't know that I put the Celtics on the same tier as Cleveland and Oklahoma City just because they've been so consistent this year. But I also wouldn't put the Celtics on the Knicks tier either. So I guess if it's between one or the other, I'd do the first tier, OKC and Cleveland, second tier. I guess it's got to be the Celtics. Should we put Cleveland? No. We can't put the Knicks in there with them after I just said that. Maybe Memphis, maybe Denver. And then you have the Knicks down. Yeah, I'd probably do that. Although they all have the same amount of wins. The Knicks are so fraudulent when it comes to the really good teams in the league. When it comes to beating bad teams and, you know, hanging around, they're a talented team for sure. But it is it has been eye-opening to watch them. What I thought was going to be a season where they really stepped to the Celtics. Instead, the Celtics have stomped all over them. And I'm here for it, by the way. Never been a Knicks fan. Never been much of a fan of that team. That being said, a lot went on over the last week. A lot of comparisons made between the NHL and the NBA and their respective All-Star breaks. And a lot of people commented on things that P.K. Subban said. Now, P.K. Subban, one of the all-time hockey weasels in the history of the game, I think. I could not stand that guy and the way he flopped. Oh, my God. When it was the Bruins in Montreal. And listen, I know I rooted for Brad Marchand all those years, so I understand the hypocrisy that's coming out of my mouth right now. But you didn't catch too many Montreal Canadiens fans talking about how much they love Brad Marchand. P.K. Subban was a weasel out there on the ice, a big-time weasel. He's a good player, great shooter, one of the better offensive defensemen, I'd say, of his generation, but a total weasel. And I still think he's a weasel now, by the way. And the reason why I say that is because he went on different networks and said that he was picking the U.S. on certain shows. He was picking Canada on other shows. He's a weasel. He's just a TV weasel. And fine, that's fine. I mean, listen, you make a lot of money being a good TV weasel. But he went on TV and started talking about how the NHL is so great and the NBA is so bad. And this past week really proved all that. And hearing that and just hearing the same dumb rhetoric you always hear when it comes to hockey and basketball. Listen to P.K. Subban.
Because you're making 100, 200, 300 million, you should be out there banged up. You should be. That's why we pay you, is to max out. We talk about greatness and it being the longevity of somebody's career. I don't care if you play 50 years. I want your best 10. I want you on the court dominating. I want you to go all out. I want Michael Jordan. I want Kobe. That's what I want in every sport. That's the guy that I follow. You're a different version than that. You don't get my respect.
Okay. Oh, no. Sorry, LeBron. You don't get P.K. Subban's respect. I know. It's going to be a tough thing to come back from. Okay. Just so you know, just so we're all clear here, load management, I think, you can go overboard with that, but you can also go overboard the other way and lose two of the best players in the Atlantic Division in a meaningless tournament. You know, like, I mean, that can also happen. And then fans of those teams in Florida and Boston are left sitting there going, okay, great. So we didn't win the gold medal, and we lost our best player, and what? You know, like, that's great. Oh, we put our best 10 out there, and we really played hard. Yeah, great. And I think it's great to play hard for your country. I mean, don't get me wrong. But come on. It was the All-Star break. That was the All-Star game. It was a tournament, and it was really fun, and I really enjoyed it. But can we get over ourselves here, please, hockey people? I mean, come on. You get way out over your skis on stuff like this. The NBA still dominates the NHL. It's not really close. It never was close, and it's still not. I mean, we're talking about two sports that are vastly different when it comes to worldwide appeal and popularity, and certainly vastly different when it comes to TV ratings. NBA ratings are very much down this year. They're still way ahead of the NHL. I mean, come on. Can we have an adult conversation here, please? I know everyone loves to go on and on about how great hockey players are and how they're so tough and they play the game the right way and blah, 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 and they're not a bunch of divas like, you know, the NBA players and whatever. I mean, it's the same crap every year, and it just gets so tiresome. There's plenty of divas in the NHL. There's a lot of hockey-playing divas. There's a lot of hockey players who aren't great people. I mean, come on. We have to make these guys all saints every single time? Because what? Because you're frustrated with the NBA All-Star break? That's annoying. I find that annoying. I find it an annoying, repetitive, secular, stupid conversation. And I'm sick of having it. And I'm surprised P.K. Subban is indulging it so much. You know, like, what are you talking? Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan? Everybody's got to be the two best players in the last, I don't know, 30 years? And what? LeBron James doesn't count? Because why? Because why? He's been playing in the league for 20 years. Michael Jordan didn't play that long. Okay, so you want to talk about a guy giving it his all and being out there all the time. LeBron James has had a remarkable career, and he's still out there in year 20-whatever, and he's still putting up big numbers. Okay, so like, can we just dismiss this whole idea that LeBron ruined the NBA and that now suddenly the NHL is overtaking it in terms of popularity because the guys really care about an all-star game tournament where they play for their country? Like, it's really, I'm finding the whole thing a little ridiculous. I'm all for this tournament. I thought it was a fun tournament. I do think there are some issues with it that aren't, you know, it's not perfect. But all in all, I thought it was a great product. And I think the NHL should be very happy about that. I think the hockey community should be very happy about that as well. But this whole idea that, you know, the NBA is just a complete husk of itself and that no one cares about any of it anymore. And it's just like, all right, guys, you're still well behind this product that no one cares about. So just remember that, I guess. You know, if you want to show me some numbers where the NHL stars really making some inroads on the NBA, then I'll gladly take a look at them. But we're not there yet. And that tournament, listen, I'm sorry, maybe if Team USA won the thing, it might have been different, but they didn't. Canada did. And so you're just going to be right back in the NHL playing those Seattle versus whoever games Thursday nights at 10 o'clock that no one's watching, and that's the way it's going to be. And then the playoffs are going to start, and the interest will be renewed. And the Stanley Cup playoffs are terrific. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. Even when the Bruins aren't in it or when they get knocked out, I still watch most of the games, as many as I can. I love that. I love the intensity. I think all that stuff's true. But let's not act like the NBA, like no one cares about that anymore, and they just go out, they roll the balls out, and just make sure everyone gets home safe. Like, that's not true at all. Look last year in the NBA. I mean, Giannis was injured. Everybody on the Knicks got injured. Like, guys get injured. Guys play through stuff, and they get injured. They make it worse, and then they can't go out there and perform. I don't see why that's such a big issue. And like, oh, well, okay, in the All-Star game, well, LeBron didn't play, so Matthew Tkachuk shouldn't have played either. And Matthew Tkachuk trying to be a hardo and go out there and play may have cost the reigning Stanley Cup champions their best player. So you tell me how important that was. I do think, though, on some level, that PK Subban maybe accidentally tapped into a good point there. Because Channing Frye was talking about this, and I think he's onto something. That the NBA may be suffering a bit right now from nostalgia. And some of the nostalgia involves guys who are still playing now. Like, I think LeBron nostalgia of him in, you know, the mid-2000s and Curry when the Warriors started really kind of coming on as this dynasty. Like, all of that. I think that those guys still playing doesn't necessarily help. But, you know, like, you don't get to look back on their careers yet because they're still out there doing it. And they haven't, I mean, they both won championships kind of recently, but they're not in their dynasty eras anymore. And no one's really stepped in to kind of take over. Like, when Brady was on his way out the door, you could tell Patrick Mahomes was chomping at the bit to take over as the main guy. And that he was going to be his league after that. Like, you knew that. LeBron and Steph Curry retire. I don't know whose league it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be Giannis's league or Jokic's league or Tatum's league or Gilgeous-Alexander's league. You know, it's really hard to make that determination right now. The Celtics have, I think, the best chance of being the next dynasty, but who is going to run the league? What personalities, what players are going to be the guys that are, when you think about the NBA, you think about them? Luka, I mean, Luka could be, the whole thing with him going to the Lakers this year, that was a big one. The NBA, that all happened during Super Bowl week. The NBA outshined the NFL during the run-up to the Super Bowl. That's a hard thing to do. And yet, ratings are still down somehow. But, I mean, you trade a big guy like Luka like that, you have a guy go off the reservation in that way, like Nico Harrison did, then, yeah, you're gonna get some headlines for that. And maybe Luka's the guy. They had a nice game against Denver last night, if you stayed up and watched that. And I think that when all is said and done here, it's going to be on this next generation of players. It's going to be on the Jokic's and the Giannis's and the Tatum's and the Gilgeous-Alexander's and Karl Anthony Towns, the rest of these guys. I mean, they're going to have to take over that mantle. And maybe you want to make the argument LeBron James held on too long. Sure, I mean, I guess you can. He's still out there performing. But to blame him for this when no one's taken it from him, I think is completely misguided. You got to take it from him. No one's done that yet. It's a new champion every year. No one runs the league. When Curry and LeBron are gone, who's taking over? I don't know. I don't know who it is. But someone has to. And I think that that uncertainty right now, I think, has more to do with what's going on in the league. One other quick thing I want to touch on here, and that is Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich, who may be all done, 76 years old, suffered a mild stroke this season and will not return to the Spurs this year, may not ever coach again. Has to be in the conversation for one of the greatest coaches of all time in this league in terms of the way he developed players, in terms of the way he was able to get back and be relevant with multiple different groups, winning with Duncan, winning with Kawhi, maintaining sort of the standard there in San Antonio for all those years, a small media market, an area that doesn't really care that much about their team and didn't until he showed up. You know, there's some good, some decent David Robinson years, but it wasn't until, you know, the Duncan Popovich and, you know, eventually Kawhi Leonard and the rest of those guys that turned San Antonio into a bit of a basketball mecca. I mean, he had a lot to do with it. Tim Duncan was the main driving factor, obviously, being one of the greatest players who ever lived. But Greg Popovich and his standards and his standard of excellence that he had down there for many, many years is something that I think is going to be looked back on with a lot of high regard. And I know that it hasn't been great in San Antonio here lately, but yeah, if this is it for him, then you're talking the easy Hall of Famer, and I think in the conversation for one of the greatest coaches of all time. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll come back and wrap things up next and hand you over to Red Sox baseball right here on Sunday Mass. All right, we got a couple of minutes left here. It's WEEI Christian Arcan, and then we'll hand things over to fellas over at the Red Sox broadcast. Will Fleming and who else today? Do we know, Jacob?
Bradfoe.
Hell yeah, Bradfoe. Hopefully he has conquered his sunglasses this weekend. Did you see the sunglasses, him with the sunglasses last weekend?
Yeah, I actually had the show right after that happened, so he explained the whole story, and it's what spring training's all about, basically, is the conclusion.
Yes. Now, he claimed that he was trying to see something on his phone, and that he had prescription sunglasses, and he couldn't see on his phone unless he put his prescription sunglasses on. Now, that's all well and good, but that doesn't explain why he somehow managed to poke himself in both eyes three times before getting those sunglasses on. He leaves them on for 2 seconds and then violently rips them off. And then when he took them off, his eye looked like he had just come in from, you know, from being out on the beach all day. But he had literally just had them on for only 2 seconds. It was a truly amazing piece of media. But that's not what I want to talk about here in this final segment. I got a couple of texts that I just got here in tweets saying, Arcan, well, who'd Jordan hand the league off to when it was his time? Fair point, but at the very least, Shaq was there, and Shaq went to L.A., and then him and Kobe became a thing, and that there wasn't a whole lot of a break between that. Now, there was a bit of a break between Celtics-Lakers in the 80s and then Jordan taking over, but you had the Bad Boy Pistons in between, so it wasn't exactly, you know, it's not like you lost that much. And then for Jordan, he had his 9 years, which is, by the way, all he really had. Like, after that, he quit basketball for a little while, P.K. Subban. Jordan would never do that. Jordan quit the sport, okay? He quit basketball and played baseball. So I know he was a great competitor when he played basketball. He's the greatest basketball player of all time. But all this talk about him, like, he was just, would never stop competing, most competitive guy in the world. He stopped playing basketball, okay? He quit the game of basketball and started playing a different game. And he wasn't very good at it, and he came back to playing basketball. But, like, all right, can we just, like, talk about reality? Can we talk about things as they happen and how they were? And even then, after he came back, he didn't play as long as LeBron played. And you can make arguments about who's better and why, and I think that one of them is that now, I was watching LeBron with Luka Doncic last night, and I'm sitting there going, man, this guy's playing with everybody. Jordan played with Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. That's basically it. Early in his career, he had Orlando Woolridge and, like, really not much else to work with. And other than Pippen and Rodman, it was like Ron Harper and Luke Longley and Bill Wennington and a bunch of scrubs who they continually, you know, brought to the finals. You know, Steve Kerr, no offense, and John Paxson and those guys. So, yeah, I mean, in the very least, you can say, all right, well, LeBron's definitely played with a lot better players, sure. But he's also played for almost twice as long now as Michael Jordan. And played at a high level the entire time. Jordan at the end was, you know, I mean, he was still pretty good, but he wasn't what LeBron is now. Not even close. That being said, I don't even really want to talk about that either. What I would like to talk about is the Steve Smith fiasco which has taken over the internet. And if you're not as online as I am, and I'll admit I'm pretty online, you may not know what I'm talking about. Jacob, you're familiar with this, right?
I'm actually not.
You're not? You don't know about Steve Smith?
I'm learning about this for the first time.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, kick your feet up. And let me tell you a story about a football player, a jilted husband, and some pretty graphic infidelity going on in the DMs. Now, Steve Smith, if you'll remember, was a Pro Bowl, All-Pro, I think, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers and also the Baltimore Ravens. I know that him and Wiggy had some beef or something. But he was a very good player. Real tough, little guy, but real tough, tough as nails. And he's now currently an analyst for NFL Network. And he had some beef this year with Jerry Jeudy. I forget exactly what that was all about. Jeudy was dancing around in the background of a shot or something because Smith had said something about him. And then they kind of beefed on air for a second. Steve Smith recently has really taken up the cause of Jalen Polk. I don't know why, but he's, oh yeah, Jalen Polk, he's awesome. It's just the Patriots didn't know how to use him. And Tyquan Underwood was a bad wide receiver coach. He went on and on and on about how the only reason Polk had a bad year is because of Tyquan Underwood not being a good wide receiver coach, which I think is literally insane. But that's not what this is about. This is about a fella on Twitter who yesterday surprised us all by revealing a series of text messages between his wife and Steve Smith. Now, his wife is part of the Baltimore Ravens, like, marching band, I think, which I didn't even know that they had a marching band. But I guess they do. In Baltimore, the Ravens, they got a marching band. They're like a college team, I guess. And this lady, I use the term lady loosely, this lady was part of the band. So she met Steve Smith that way. And then the two of them began an affair. Now, this husband discovered it. And I guess when you discover something like this, it hasn't happened to me before, and to God willing, it won't. But you discover something like this, there's two ways you can go about it. You can take it to the grave, right? Which, if it was me, probably what I would do. Or you can do what this fella did, which is call Steve Smith, record the conversation, in which Steve Smith, very contrite, by the way, he's like, sorry, man. Sorry, I was doing your wife, but you know, like, and then also post all of the text conversations, including a selfie of Steve Smith, where he's looking down on the camera, making just the funniest face ever for a guy in the mix of an entanglement like we're seeing right now. At any rate, the guy fully crashed out, posted it everywhere. It spread like wildfire. Jake, I'm shocked you haven't seen this yet.
I really haven't.
It's all over the internet. It's Barstool's got like three posts about it already. It's all over Twitter. It's hard to avoid at this point. I'm surprised. Anyways, the next step, we're not sure of. The guy deleted his account. But hopefully this all gets resolved. And we'll see what ends up happening with Steve Smith and the NFL Network. But got to be careful out there. And these two are not being careful. Very explicit text messages that anyone could see. And Steve Smith's married too. So, best of luck to everyone involved. And that's all the time I have here on Sunday Mass. Stick around. We got Rob Bradford. We got Will Fleming. We got the Red Sox. We got the Blue Jays. We got Bregman at third base. We got Garrett Crochet on the mound. Spring training baseball is back in Fort Myers, and I'm very happy about that. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Jacob, great job. As always, that's all for me. Enjoy the baseball. Bye.